Suggestion number 16716, Gervais Markham, Reel 1.
Canon Markham, Reel 1. When and where were you born, Canon?
I was born on the 7th of November 1910 in the vicarage Grimsby, where my father was the vicar.
And is the religious ministry part of your family heritage?
Well, my father was a clergyman, and he ended up as Bishop of Grantham. His father was a country clergyman in Lincolnshire, and his father was Colonel of the 60th. His father was private secretary to Warren Hastings, and his father was the Archbishop of York. So we have soldiers and clergymen very largely in the family.
What was your mother's background?
My mother came from what you call a county family in Suffolk. She lived at a big house called Sotterley Park. The family was Barn, and they still live at Sotterley, and she was brought up in the atmosphere of a large country house, and was rather surprised to marry a young, rather dashing clergyman when she was a young woman.
Did you have brothers and sisters?
Yes, I had four sisters, one older than myself, and three younger. And though we were all born between 1908 and 1918, we are all still alive in 1996.
Was it a comfortable family background?
Well, looking back on it, it's surprising what the style of life of a vicarage was in the time of my childhood. When my father was made vicar of Grimsby in 1908, he came to a comparatively large house with a glebe of 10 acres in what is now the heart of Grimsby, but what was then on the outskirts. This house had been built in the 1820s, and when we went to live there, I remember as a child that there was always a cook, and there was a kitchen maid, and when there were five children, we had a nanny who obviously had to have a nursemaid, and there was a gardener and usually a gardener's boy. How my parents managed to afford this on the salary of a clergyman, I don't know, but that was the way that we lived. We four children were brought up in the nursery upstairs. My father was obviously very busy the whole time as being the vicar of Grimsby. But we lived in this large house with a large garden, a tennis court and a croquet lawn and a kitchen garden, and a field, and then it ran out to the two other fields belonging to the glebe of the parish. One was the town cricket club, which was just over our garden fence at the bottom, and the other was the playing field of the choir school. So it was like a small country estate in what is now the middle of Grimsby. And as you will hear later, I went back to the same place as a grown man and lived in the same house myself later on, though in very different domestic circumstances. Anyhow, as children, we lived in this during the First World War. We were there, I remember well. I think the Admiral was billeted on us because there was we were one of the few houses with a telephone, I think, and we had a blue jacket sitting by the telephone all day long, armed to the teeth, as I remember, Perhaps he wasn't all the time, but I remember him sitting by the telephone with a bayonet, but perhaps that's my imagination. But anyhow, I remember various incidents in the First World War, which don't really have much relevance now, but that's where we were brought up. My mother used to teach us herself. She was a very good natural teacher of children. I went to the local high school for girls before I went off to prep school at Scarborough, a prep school called Bramcote in Scarborough, which meant crossing the Humber. It was a very exciting voyage to and fro from school. We used to get stuck on sandbanks. There's still this little ferry boat went to and fro, primitive thing, but it was great fun. 5 years at Bramcote.
What was life like in school at that time?
What was life like in school? Well, it was a strict prep school, which believed in strict discipline, and we were taught, not just allowed to grow up, we were taught formally, so we learned how to work. One of the incidents which often comes back to my mind, in fact I quoted it at the speech days at public schools and that sort of thing, how you learn to apply your mind to a thing so that you learn afterwards that if you really apply your mind to a thing, you can master it. And this was when, I suppose in my fourth year at prep school, we were doing Latin and Greek, of course, I have to learn the aorist passive paradigm of the verb luo, which meant learning how to say eluthin, luthiti, lutho, luthain, luthinai, luthais. But I could not bring myself to learn it until I was kept in after school that afternoon. And I remember being on the headmaster's study floor with this in front of me, and outside I could hear the other boys, I could hear the sound of cricket balls and cricket bats, and I was determined I wanted to go out and play cricket. And I set myself, I will learn this, and I learnt eluthin, luthiti, lutho, luthain, luthinai, luthais, and I've remembered it ever since. And so I always learnt that if you really want to learn something and you apply your mind to it, you can do it. And that's the sort of thing we were taught to do at Bramcote. Very good education.
Was there corporal punishment in the school?
Oh, yes. How very beneficial it was, too. I was caned on two or three occasions by the headmaster, and it was a source of pride afterwards when you displayed your bottom when you were having baths later on, but it was very sanitary. It taught me a lesson about that I'd got to behave myself and to do what I was told, and this was getting good for me.
Is there any one teacher that stands out in your mind as influencing you in your afterlife?
Oh, yes. There were two headmasters. One was R.D. Slater and the other was R.G. Pidcock. Pidcock was he was an old Wickhamist. He was very keen on getting his boys to Winchester. I have correspondence with me now between him and my father, and between other people about him, who said he was the ideal type of headmaster. He was strict, he was scholarly, he was a good games player, but he was a convinced Christian, and he dealt with us all with great affection, with great strictness. He took enormous interest in each of his boys. His correspondence with my father about me was very revealing, and I treasure it. So that I have great respect for him, and he insisted on putting me in for a scholarship at Winchester. I didn't quite get it. I came 19th on the roll, but I was given a an exhibition, I think £50 a year, which sounded a very great deal. I was very proud of that. But I was in one of the houses at Winchester. But one of the interesting things, looking back on it, which I still value at Bramcote, was Pidcock's habit of giving the top class some, they were called, not quotations, contexts, that was the word, contexts. Once a week on the blackboard, he would write, say, half a dozen little sentences from the Bible, authorized version, of course. And by the end of the week, we had to be able to say who said it, to whom, and on what occasion. And there was great competition. We were not supposed to conspire with each other, but we had to trace down these contexts in the Bible. And I've still got them marked in the Bible, which in fact I use still from time to time, a little pencil mark. I found that underlined. And these are the sort of key quotations from Scripture, which have been part of my sort of folk memory ever since. It's extraordinary looking back on it now, comparing it with what I would try to get children of 10 or 11 years old to do today, how we managed to track out these little sentences. Of course, there was a little bit of conspiring between the boys. You would bribe another boy with a toffee to give you a clue about it, and he would give you one word clue, and then you would find it in another book in the Bible, whatever it was. But it meant that we knew our Bibles pretty thoroughly by the time we'd gone through that school.
Did sport become important to you?
Oh, yes. Played a great deal of cricket and football, soccer. I played full school, I suppose, in both cricket and football, and learnt, we were taught properly how to play. We had nets, and we were taught proper cricket strokes, and so we were brought up as proper cricket-playing boys. We had those slip-catch machines, and we played interminable fringe cricket and all the rest of it, but cricket was part of your life during the summer, and you learned how to play, and you learned the importance of it, as it were.
Between schools and during the closure of this, at the end of the terms, what activities did you get up to then?
Well, we went back to Grimsby Vicarage, and then we just had ordinary family life, I suppose. Looking back on it, perhaps the most notable thing was every summer my father would pick a remote rectory somewhere in England, and at a place that we'd never been to before, and he would do a locum, as it was called. We took over the whole house, and in return for him doing the Sunday duty, we would have the house free for a month in the summer. And we would all go together. In the early days, it meant, of course, we went by train, when we took our nanny and a cook and a maid, we would travel to a little later on when we had our bicycles. We would take our bicycles with us as well. We didn't have a car. There was no question of owning a car or driving a car in those days. But I remember well, we would change at Sheffield or Nottingham or somewhere that was exciting in the town, and then you would go into a smaller train, and you would arrive in the middle of Shropshire or somewhere, some remote little station, and you would, all the bicycles would be pulled out in the guard's van, and then the luggage, and there would be a horse and cart to take the luggage, but all of us, seven of us, I suppose, at one time, we would cycle off along this country lane till we got to this remote rectory, and you would find that there was no electricity, that you had to learn how to do the Aladdin lamps, You would find there was no, the only lavatory accommodation was a squattery in the bushes, what do you call it? There would be a little hut in the garden where you would go and sit on a wooden seat with a particular smell. I remember it suddenly come back to my mind, the bare wooden seat of these outside privies, they were called, weren't they? But we would spend a month there. We would get introductions to houses round about and go play tennis. We would see the local sights. We would go to the local castle. We were taken around sightseeing and a lot of sketching. My father was a very keen sketcher, and we were all taught to have our sketchbooks. We didn't have cameras. We took sketchbooks, and when we visited anywhere, we would all sit down and learn how to make a sketch of it. This was my childhood holidays.
You say you left school to go to Winchester.
Went to Winchester.
Was that by examination?
Oh, indeed. How else could you get into Winchester? How else can you still, at this time, get into Winchester? It was, of course, there was a scholarship examination, which was for the 70 poor scholars who'd been there for 700 years or so. And this was regarded as being the most difficult scholarship examination of all the different public schools. And to get a scholarship at Winchester was the accolade. And, of course, there were big boards of the scholarship winners. And every year there'd be a top class of six or seven boys, and three or four of them would usually get a scholarship at one of the major public schools. And I was put in for Winchester, but as I say, I only got an exhibition. But if you didn't get a scholarship, you still had to pass, well, common entrance in order to get into the school at all. So that it was quite an accolade. There were, of course, a great many prep schools all over England who were grooming their boys to get these places at the major public schools. Bramcote. There were two, as there still are, two major prep schools in the north of England, one being Bramcote and the other being Aysgarth. And we were the great rivals who was to get the best scholarships every year, as well as a school cricket match in Bramcote v Aysgarth. And this still goes on to this very day, as you may know.
What age was it when you moved to Winchester?
13, 14, yeah.
As a young boy starting in a public school of as famous as that, were you somewhat awed by the situation?
Oh, it was very, yes, certainly awe-inspiring. But then you knew you were being put up with something very important. To get a scholarship at Winchester, as I may tell you later on, the second and third generations, this goes on to this very day. Where I went down to Winchester with my headmaster, and we stayed in a house of a friend's in Winchester, and we turned up every morning, big school, and sat doing our writing examinations. And then after 3 days, I think it was, you got the word, you're being kept on for one more day. This meant that this was a hint that you were in the line for a scholarship. And telegrams passed to my father. He's still in for one more day. Went back the next day, there was a final exam, and then a personal interview with the headmaster and with the warden, Viva Versi, and then within few hours, I suppose, it was known who were the people who'd got scholarships, and the rest then you went back. But it was a very tough exam, and personally, looking back on my career, I think I was cleverer then than I've ever been the rest of my life. I look back at the examination papers that I did, and good heavens, how on earth did I manage to cope at the age of 13 with such examination papers?
Yeah. Can you tell me a little about life at Winchester?
I was in B House. That was in a house in Kingsgate Street, very close to the main body of the school, and it was pretty Spartan. We had a housemaster, H.A. Jackson, the Jacker, for whom I still have enormous respect as a housemaster. He kept a very strict, tight control over us. We had dormitories, of course, where we slept in dormitories, and we had we each had what was called a toys in round the big schoolroom where we did our work. Each of us had a little compartment where you had a desk and a cupboard beside you, and you sat in this. So just room for two of you to sit together, and all the way around the room there was, each boy had his toys. The prefects had what were called horse boxes, a little compartment where they, about 8 foot square, I suppose, where they had a little room inside. And during toys time in the evening, doing your prep, you all sat round doing your prep in the evening, and one of the prefects would sit at the central table, and then he would finish with precis, with prayers, before we went up to bed. You had to do a certain amount of exercise every week. Football counted as 1 hour, cricket counted as 1 hour, squash would count, well, very little squash was played. No, fives was a much more particular proper game, counted as an hour. You had tolling or running, cross-country running. There was one run round hills at St. Catherine's Hills just outside Winchester. If you got ran round that within half an hour, that counted as an hour's exercise. If there was a shorter run, which you had to do within a quarter of an hour, that counted as half hour's exercise. At the end of the week, you had to show up to the prefect that you had so many hours exercise during the week. But you could pick exactly which particular form of exercise you chose, unless you were in a team, of course.
Was fagging part of your life?
Fagging? Oh, yes. It meant when you... Well, your first fortnight, you were exempt. You had what was called a TJ, a protégé, someone who taught you the rules, the manners, the customs, the language, the things you did and the things you didn't do. And at the end of the fortnight, you had, this was called learning your notions. You had a notions examiner after a fortnight, and if you didn't succeed, your TJ got beaten. By one of the prefects. But after that, then you had certain fagging duties. It was called sweating. And you each had a prefect for whom you were responsible. Perhaps you did his... You had to learn how to press his trousers under your bed so that he got us... and how to brush his clothes. You had to learn how to roll his umbrella. You had to, and of course he could send you out if he wanted something. He could send you out on a message to another house or whatever it was. It wasn't a severe thing. It was a discipline which was a very healthy thing. You learnt, for one thing, how to respect your seniors. And when you became a prefect yourself, you learned how to treat somebody properly with them, to respect a junior's integrity. One wouldn't use those words in those days, of course, but it meant you could learn how to tell somebody to do something which was reasonable. And you knew it was possible because you'd done it yourself for somebody else. So you couldn't tell people to do something unreasonable. There was none of this public school fiction about homosexuality and cruelty and torture and all that sort of thing. This is pure imagination, in my experience. We were humane to each other. We were all friends. We were all the same social class. We knew each other's backgrounds. And we were all friends together. But you had respect for people who were 4 years older than you did. You were, and you knew that you had to do what you were told. And it's a very good thing to learn to do what you're told.
Was this the first time that you'd actually been away from home? You hadn't been living in the school prior to this.
Oh, well, I lived at home till I was 9 years old when I went to prep school in Scarborough. So that was when the first night being away from home, the first night in prep school, I was absolutely miserable. And I began writing a letter the very first day saying, please take me away. Then I didn't know where to get a stamp I didn't know how to post this letter, and by the end of the next 24 hours I'd made friends with one or two boys and I didn't send the letter. I was happy after that. But it's a good thing to go through that.
What particular course were you studying at Winchester?
Well, it was based on classics, Latin and Greek. We had quite advanced teaching. We had extremely good schoolmasters there. Some of the masters had written the books that they were teaching. We did elementary biology, I remember, from Mr. McDowell, which was the first time biology had been done in forms. We had musical appreciation, which was the first time it was done, and that was conducted by George Dyson, who became head of the Royal College of Famous Composer afterwards. We didn't realize, we were very fortunate indeed to have these excellent people teaching us. We did algebra with Jorel, who written the book on algebra. And we did geomorphology, I remember, at one time. We learned, of course, French and German. I did German in my last year with a marvelous housemaster. And I remember still, it was quite elementary German, but we used to sing German student songs, Burschen heraus, lasset es schallen vom Haus zu Haus. And you learn German by doing these amusing things. As well as, of course, the Latin and Greek were the mainstay of our education in those days.
Did your subjects narrow as you went through and you begin to specialise towards the top end of the school?
No, it's not nearly as specialised as it is today. I think the emphasis was on avoiding specialisation. They were not trying to cram you for an exam, but to give you an education. And an education was to be as wide as possible to make you not somebody who could pass exams, but to be an educated man. So you were doing all these different things. But whatever you did was at the highest level. You learnt to value excellence, and this was, I suppose, in school mastering world yourself, you know how difficult it is to get boys to accept a standard and not to fall below such a standard, not to be content with shoddy work, with second class work. How to motivate boys to do what is best. And, of course, we knew, because of the traditions of the school, that the boys who went through that education would, in the course of their life, come pretty well to the top in whatever profession that they adopted in later life. So that looking back on it now, I can see how many of the my contemporaries there did, in fact, become... Well, if you went in the academic world, you'd be a professor. If you went into politics, you'd be in the cabinet, and so on. It was expected that you had passed the most difficult examination in England at the age of 13. And that meant that people who could do that were going to be able to compete in the next 10, 20, 30 years. They had beaten their contemporaries at the age of 13. They should be able to go on being the kind of people who were chosen to be leaders, because they'd shown capacity at an early age.
What was the final examination you were working to?
We did school certificate, which was fairly elementary, I suppose. We did, I got my Cert A. Have you ever heard of Cert A? This was by being in the Corps, OTC, Officers Training Corps. And I think the proudest moment of my life, when I was platoon sergeant of my house platoon, and I learned the very valuable lesson of being learning to stand up in front of my contemporaries and shout at them and make them do what I wanted to do. and proudest moment when my platoon won Drill Cup, which was the elementary sort of drill competition between, and I look back on being a platoon commander as being a very formative part of my education. But